So source sheets are coming around. All right, I'm going to start. Good evening. Thank you all for coming. So tonight we're going to talk about the concept of women and minyan, the quorum for 10. And clearly we don't have a lot of time, and this is a big topic. And I made it a little bit even more big, bigger than you might have thought, which you'll see in a second. But hopefully we'll at least get to look at the majority of the sources. I wanted to say this disclaimer. Clearly, because it's a limited time, I have to choose which sources to bring. So in each section, I do bring you one or two sources that say, no, it can't be. But my goal is to show where there might be possibility of yes or where there's flexibility. And that is definitely my agenda. So if we were in at my year course at Pardes and we could spend, you know, 5-6 classes on this, I really would show the whole spectrum. And I am going to try to show the main sources that say no to things when there is a no. But my goal is to show you the possibilities of flexibility, you know, the openings and the places where you might not have realized things. So that is where I'm coming from, and that is how the source sheet is built. That's thing number one. Thing number two, I think when you think about the topic of women in minyan, or if you were to ask Joe Schmo Jew on the street, can women count in a minyan in a halacha community or orthodox community or something like that? I think pretty much everyone knows the answer. It's obviously that they cannot. And that I think that this is accepted by many people as sort of this a bottom line where there is like not really any flexibility in this, and everyone knows that there isn't. And maybe those other groups that want to do crazy things and be more egalitarian are changing things, but this isn't the thing that's ever going to change. And what is interesting about this fact is that it's not as really so clear cut and dry. I mean, I'm curious of what you think if I throw out to you, like, why can't women count in a minyan, or what's the source for it? What have you learned, or what have you heard, or if you've heard anything? Kavod Tzibur, you learned that they can't count in a minyan? Meaning, in theory, they could, but just because of honor to the community, they can't? I'm not, I'm just curious, what do you mean when you say that?
I said that, and I'm wondering
would you learn that from reading the Torah or from minyan? Okay. Okay. But anyone else? Why can't women? I mean,
something about Kedusha.
Kedusha, that what?
That a man has to say, I'm not sure. He has to say it in a minyan of men.
Yeah, but why? Something to do with Kedusha, yeah?
I believe that the origin of the minyan.
Yeah. This is not a test. I'm just curious, yeah? The 10 spies, yeah.
And because they count as a minion, and they were all men.
They were also really pretty poor, bad people.
Exactly.
So it'd be fine. Except for two of them, but they're the two that don't get that. There were 12 spies, one for each Shevet, and then two of them, the good ones, aren't in the group. We're going to see this text. And so then the model, you're right, there's a funny model here. So the question is, can we learn from that model anything? Can we learn gender from that model? It would be weird. They aren't really great model because they're not great people at all. So is it that they're 10 spies and they were all men, so therefore it has to be men? We'll have to see that. Yeah.
Is it because
of women's obligations and feelings? Okay. Is it linked possibly? So if it was, then what would the argument be? Okay, so that could possibly be an argument. The problem that, of course, we don't have all the time to do is that if we were to learn about women's obligation in tefillah, we would actually see another shocking thing that you might not know, is that men and women are obligated, according to the large majority of the sources, and I'm talking Mishnah, Talmud, Rambam, Shulchan Aruch, like all the way up till we get to the Magen Avraham in Poland, the same as men. And so there's a problem there if we want to possibly say that, or possibly not, or we have to start saying things which I've heard when I was growing up. Well, that might be true that men and women are obligated equally in private prayer, but men are obligated in public prayer and women aren't. Well, then you say, well, how do you know that? And then they say, well, because women don't count in a minyan. Well, then how do you know that? Because women aren't obligated. I've had this like circular logic. So I want to try to unpack some of these things. I don't guarantee that we're going to be able to do everything in our short time together. The second thing that I want to point out, and I want to do it through some sources, not all of them, is although the most famous type of minyan is the one for prayer, there are actually lots of different quorums of 10 within halakha. And women's status in all of them is actually different. It's not the same. What do I mean by that? Two of the text cases we're going to look at together, and that's the 10 in Zimun, when we invite for Birkat HaMazon, and possibly the 10, if you think that you need 10, for Megillah reading. And we're going to look at some sources with those in 1 second. Before that, though, there are other things that I didn't bring you sources for, which thank God we don't do anymore today. But let's say if the court wanted to kill you for transgressing Shabbat in public as opposed to in private, how do you define public? You have to do it in front of 10 what? So in that type of 10, for publicity's sake, the halakha counts women. You could give all sorts of arguments because there the group isn't really coming together. It's like someone did something in the street and I could be over there and 10 people saw it. So maybe there's something different about that grouping of 10, but it is a public 10 that women could count on. There's the 10 for, it's a sort of later type of 10, Birkat HaGomel, when someone makes a blessing after being saved from a life-threatening situation. You're supposed to also do that publicly. It needs a 10. I could have brought you this source. Maybe I should have. The Mishnah Berurah said you could do that with 9 women and 1 man. He seems to have some flexibility in that type of 10. We're going to see a type of 10 in some of the sources that's going to be mentioned of martyrdom. Another thing that, thank God, doesn't happen all that often. But if someone says, you know, transgress or I'm going to kill you, certainly we want to live by the mitzvot, and we hope that you, in some cases, you can transgress. They're the big three of idol worship, sort of some of the incestuous sexual relationships and killing other people that you can transgress. But even within that context of other mitzvot, it depends on if the act is a public one, like the person who's threatening you is trying to make some type of public statement. We're going to see a source that talks about that. And then you might have to martyr yourself. And public, who counts in that public? And we're going to see sources that are going to count women in that 10. And that's going to be the most difficult, when I say difficult, in a good type of difficult way, because it's going to be the same verses of the same spies that we're going to see with tefillah. That's going to be those verses for martyrdom. And then it's going to get really tricky if you want to try to learn it from the verses, because how can you sometimes use those verses and include women and sometimes not? So this is a complex issue. Let's try to look at some of the sources. I decided I wanted to show you some other things besides tefillah, just so you could see some of the issues that are used in figuring out those, and we can then try to think about if they're going to be applicable with tefillah or not. And when I say tefillah, it's really a catchphrase for the few things that happen in the synagogue, and we're going to see a list of those. But the first text, and really if we want to see any statements by the rabbis from the time period of the Mishnah and the Talmud about groupings of women and can they make up groupings, Zimun, and I don't know where everyone's coming from, Zimun is when we're saying grace after meals, there's a possibility of people to do that as a group. And when you do that as a group, you add an additional invitation to the other people that says, let's bless God together. And the first type of grouping for that is a grouping of 3. And that is actually, I could give you a whole class on that. We're not actually really, I want to sort of in some way skip over that one. And the next type of grouping is going to be a grouping of 10. Where then you add an extra blessing to God's name. You add the word Eloheinu to the blessing. So we're going to look at one text that's talking about the grouping of 3, but I'm really interested in the grouping of 10. And the question of can you have mixed groupings of 3, I would have brought you lots of other sources. There are some sources that say you can. There are many sources that say you can't. But here's the original source in the Talmud that is a Braita first and then a Talmud analysis, something from the time period of the Mishnah, that talks about the issue. And it says the following, Tashma, come in here. Nashim mizamnot la'atzmam, va'avadim mizamnim la'atzmam. Nashim va'avadim uktanim, im ratzu lazamem, im mizamnim. So women can invite themselves. We're talking now about the group of 3. 3 women can create this sort of religious ritual core group and do Birkat HaMazon together. Slaves could do it together, but if women, slaves, and minors wanted together to come together to do it, they cannot. And now, I need to tell you some background. Everything is all interrelated. The purpose of this being brought in the Talmud text is actually not to analyze women at all. The Gemara is trying to discuss a different question. The Mishnah said that three men who come together do a zimun, and they're obligated to do it. And the Gemara wants to know, what about two men? Could two men do a zimun if they wanted to? They don't have to, but is there something special about the unit three? Or, like, could two do it? Meaning there seems to be some idea that we're going to see, Rashi's going to quote the source that was originally in the Gemara, that God is magnified, the greatness of God is magnified when a group of people come together. And the more people there are, the greater the magnification of God. So that's why if there's 10, you add another name of God. And actually, the Mishnah says, what if there's 100? What if there's 1,000? And adds more and more names of God. And so in this conversation, we understand maybe three create some grouping. But is two enough? It's more than one, but it's not really a group. And that's what they're trying to figure out. Nothing to do with women. I tell you this because the flow of the text is to say, I'm not sure. Let's bring a test case from something else. Can I learn from it? And then it actually rejects it and then brings another test case. Can I learn it? And they say, no, that case is different. I can't. And they keep bringing these test cases and then they reject them. One of the test cases that they want to bring is this case about women. Now, when you first read this case about women, you think, what does this have to do with anything about two men? I'm presuming we're talking about three women. How can I learn anything about two men? So now the Gemara is going to tell you. How is it that you could learn anything about two men? Because it says the following. V'ha mea nashe ketre gavri daminan. 100 women are like 2 men. Now, this is coming to tell us that women don't accumulate mass. Meaning that there could be 100 women in this room, but they don't come together to create some type of group that blesses God. Similar to the question of our case of like the two men aren't really a mass of people. So there's some now. Where did the Gemara get this statement? It's the only place in the Gemara it's stated. It's not like it's like, you know, two birds in the hand is better than one. It's not like one of these statements that, you know, that everyone says on the street. And it seems particularly crafted for this case. Because if it wasn't, you'd say 100 women are like one man. Like, why say 100 women are like 2 men? And don't start asking me then 500 women. Could they? Like, I don't think that's what the Gemara is talking about. They want to say to you, women don't accumulate weight. And then our thought process is they could do a zimun. So therefore, 2 men should be able to do a zimun. So the assumption, the havamina, the assumption of the Gemara is that even the more women there are, it doesn't create a situation of a religious core plurality. But what's interesting is this gets rejected by the Gemara. The Gemara says, Shani Hatam, no, this case is different. I can't learn anything about 2 men from it. That's the whole flow. Why? De'ika de'ot. Because women have minds. I know this might surprise you, but women have minds. And the rabbis even know this. They have minds. What does it mean that they have minds, and why is this relevant? So if you look at skip to source number 2 for a second, Rashi explains what it means, de'ika de'ot. It says, de'ot shlosha chashivi lahodot tfei mishnei anashim. De'ika mishum gadlu lahashem iti. The minds of 3 women are considered capable of praising God more than 2 men would. Because there exists the pasuk, meaning this is the whole premise of the zimun. The pasuk is this, that, right, great, right, God is, the greatness of God is magnified through me, and the rest of the pasuk, I put it there in the English for you, right, and therefore we're going to sing God's praises together to God's name. And so Rashi seems to be saying, you thought the Gemara that women don't accumulate mass, but that's not true. Women have minds. So when there's 1 of us and then 2 of us and 3 of us and then 4 of us and then 5 and 6 and 7 and 8, there are each individual minds who are each praising God, and that accumulation gives greater praise to God. And so the assumption of the Gemara has been rejected. And Rashi basically says 3 women are considered more than 2 men. And so here we have a concept, at least in this section of the Zimun, we're not yet at the 10, that individual women can represent something about magnifying God's name, and the more of them that do it, the greater the magnification of God's name. Yes?
But I don't understand, because he says, to say that women don't accumulate mass, he said 100 women are comparable to 2 men, but he says, but 100, I mean, even 3 women can make a zimun among themselves. So if 100 women are comparable to 2 men, then why shouldn't 2 men be able to?
That's the idea. That's the Havamina, meaning the Gemara. Maybe I'm trying to go too quickly,
then
and I apologize.
Men,
The Gemara is trying to figure out, and I could have brought you the whole long Gemara, but then we would have 1,000 pages in our source book. The Gemara is trying to figure out something about men. Can two men do a zimun? Is that enough of a mass that there's extra blessing to God? And they're trying to prove it. They brought another text to say, well, what about this case? And they haven't successfully done it. And then they bring our case and they say, well, three women can do a zimun. At first you think, well, that doesn't tell me anything about two men. And then the Gemara says, let me explain to you why you could learn something. Women don't accumulate mass. So even if it's 100 women doing it, it's like no major group. They never accumulated the mass. They're just like two men. And we let them do it, so we'll let two men do it. And then the Gemara says, so that's what you said. The Gemara says, Shani Hatam, no. The case of three women is different than the case of two men. Why? Because women have minds. What does it mean, women have minds? Rashi explains this. Because when there are three women blessing God, it's three people blessing God. And when there are two men blessing God, it's only two people. So I
don't agree with this.
They, A, are saying, I can't learn anything about two men. And B, they're saying, I reject the premise that women don't accumulate religious weight. I want to say weight. I don't know what word I should say. Religious presence, that a group of women doesn't magnify God. The premise was, Zimun, the more you have, the more God's name is magnified. And we reflect that by adding language of blessing to God in the Zimun.
But so he's actually rejecting the statement that 100 men...
Yes! Yes, that's why I'm bringing it! Yes! Yes! The Gemara, the Gemara rejects it. And Rashi explains why the Gemara rejects it. The Gemara says women have minds. And therefore, when there are more women here, more minds are blessing God. They do have religious, godly blessing premise.
So
okay.
If they have minds.
Yep.
And men have minds. So why can't you have one man and two women, or one woman and two men?
Great. Gemara. Back to the line of the Gemara. Exactly what the Gemara sort of asked. It says, if you just said that women have minds, I hachi ema seifa. So why do you say at the end? You said at the end of this brighter right here that women and slaves and minors couldn't join together to a zimun. Nashim v'avadim imratzu lezamein, ein mezamnim, amai lo, v'ha ika deot. Wait, you just said they have minds. It must be that slaves also have minds. That's why they can do it. So why can't women and slaves do a zimun together? They all have deot. Why can't they join together? Not yet men. Let's remember the text says slaves. And so the Gemara answers, Shani Hatam, no, the case of women and slaves is different. Mishum pritsuta. That case is different because of pritsut, licentiousness, immoral behavior. We don't know exactly what that means, but it seems to be a mixing of a group of, in the Gemara, of women and slaves. There's something, we don't like mixing, presuming the slaves are male, the women are female. Okay, now, so it's good that you asked this question, because this is going to be an issue that we're going to see raised in a number of places. Maybe my problem with mixed groupings is there's some type of immorality. Are you raising your hand? Yes. Yeah.
It says here that there's a problem with pritzos between slaves and women. What would be the halakha? What would be the issue with men and women?
Okay, so that's part of, maybe I shouldn't have started with the zimun, but you're going to see the reason I start with the zimun is because the crazy thing is, there's nothing in the Gemara when it gets to Tefillah that actually says women don't count in a minyan. I'm giving you one of my punchlines. No statement in the Mishnah or Gemara that says you can't do a mixed thing. So when the people, later halachic decisors are going to try to analyze it, because they all know women don't count, they're going to be grabbing at other things. And one of the things they're going to grab at is the sources that they have in other places talking about units. And so some people are going to want to grab at this. And so the question is this something special to slaves? I personally, and not just me, we're going to see other people, think, yeah, it's just personal to slaves. And it might just be personal to Zimun, because what is a Zimun? We do a weird thing today in the Orthodox world. We have men and women eat together all the time, but then they don't do a Zimun together because it might be pritsut. But really, the point of what does it mean to make a zimun together? It meant that we ate together, right? The zimun is a signification of that a group of people joined together and now we're going to say a blessing. So if you had slaves at home, you might not want them eating with your women at home when you're off at work, because there's wine. That's what they drank then. And in general, I don't want to be negative to Canaanite slaves, but the rabbis have some negative opinions about Canaanite slaves, and they think they're interested in fraternizing with your women and with other all sorts of other things, and they don't think that highly of them. So it's probable that the pshat of this is really about women and slaves, and I don't know what it says about men. And the question is, how are we going to read it? A lot of people want to say, well, it's also a problem with women and men. In a moment, we're going to see someone who's going to say, what are you talking about? But I still want to claim that I'm not actually talking about the three. But if you wanted to find a way to do a mixed zimun of three, a quite easy way you could do it is to say pritzut isn't relevant. And some people know pritzut isn't relevant, and if we were doing this as a whole thing, people like the Mishnah Berurah say things like, ein chavratam na'eh. It's not nice to hang out with women. I mean, I know you know that, right? It's not nice. And so they're like, why do you want to join with them? But those are less concrete halachic things. I'm going to move forward or else I'm like going to be doomed. I promise you everything is exciting and interesting, but I want to show you a few things still about Zimun. And maybe I'll even have to skip Megillah reading and you'll read it on your own and we'll go to Tefillah. Is this the following? I want to talk about the 10, the issue of the 10, and I'm less interested in the mixing of the three, although we'll mention it. The Mordechai, one of the last of the Tosafists, on the phrase, Shani Hatam De'ika Deot, on this case is different, women have minds, says the following. Mikan Mashma, from here we can learn, Dinashim Yicholot Lizamein Latzmam, that women can do a grouping still of three for themselves. B'chenasu B'not HaRav Avram Miorlins, one of the early Tosafists, Chamiv Shel Rabbi Yehuda, Api Avihim. So there's this one crazy family where their father taught the girls that they should do a zimun for themselves. And then the Tosafot asks a very good question. Umihu lo nahagu ha'lamken. It seems to be what the Gemara is saying you should do. Like, why isn't this the custom of the world? He doesn't answer it right here. And then he goes on to sort of reinforce this. He says something very interesting. Gam Rabbeinu Simcha haya osem ma'aseh. So Rabbeinu Simcha is a famous Tosafist. We lost his actual writings in everything he did mostly. We only have him reported by other Tosafists, not just on women's things, but on other things. But he's a very well-known and considered posek from this time period. Osem ma'aseh means he did it. Not just he like taught a class like I'm teaching, but he did. What did he do? L'tzareif isha liyud lezimun. He would have a woman join. I don't know if it's only one. He doesn't say here. Later on, we're going to talk about if it's only one. To the 10 of Zimun. Why? Okay, another class that we're not giving here. What's women's obligation in Birkat HaMazon? Is it from the Torah? Is it for the rabbis? A dispute that's raised with a confusing thing in the Gemara. Majority of Rishonim think that it's from the Torah. Some think not. I'm not caring about it because he doesn't care. He says, even if you think women have a different level of obligation than men, right? Because we thought maybe there might be some issue that you needed to have equal obligations for him. He says, even if she's only obligated to Rabbanan, and we know that the men are obligated from the Torah. Aval litzaref ba'alma l'haskarat shem shamayim shapir mitzarefet. Right? All we're talking about, and this is what sometimes kills me, because I like this attitude. He's like, the point here is we want more Jews to bless God. And when there are more Jews saying, let's bless God's name, the more God's name is blessed. And so he says, that's the whole premise of this 10. So who cares? She's obligated to do it for the rabbi. She's not obligated to do it. She's supposed to be blessing God's name. All we want is to join people to do it. Of course she's going to count. Right? That's his statement. Like, who cares what the level of chiyuv is? No one's being fulfilling anything. All we're saying is there are more Jews here saying, let's bless God. God's our God. We're going to add the word Elokeinu. What does it matter? That's his attitude.
Sorry, yeah. Is there any added value to doing the zimun, to blessing in threes than blessing by yourself?
I think you get to bless God more. That's the added value.
What?
You get to first of all say, right, Rabbatai Nevrech, Yehi Shem Adonai Farach Mihan. Right, we say God's name is blessed. Right. I mean, I can stand here right now and go, let's bless God's name. And you could all go, yes, God's name is blessed. There isn't anything bad, but there's some special idea that as opposed to me singly saying something, when a group says it, it has more weight. I think we have that in lots of things, right? You know, I can say all the time, racism is bad. But if a whole group of people says racism is bad, like that's heard louder, right? When people do things as a group, the message they want to do is magnified. All the more so of Jews blessing God. So that's all he's saying. He says, when I worry about this, who cares? Level obligation, shmevla, who cares? All we want to do is mention God's name. For sure women can count. So that's what Zimun, I'm going to...
Why isn't this the custom of the world?
Yeah, he goes...
He doesn't,
Why skip that part? It goes up longer. You want to know why it's not the custom of the world? Because he says, no, because women are stupid. No, but not stupid. He says, there's a problem. Women, everyone agrees women are obligated to say Birkat HaMazon, whether you think it's from the rabbis or not, or the Torah or not. But he says, but women don't know how to do it. They don't know how to read in Hebrew. This is in this century. I'm just telling you the truth. And so he says, what, we're going to obligate them to do even an extra thing? That they can't even do the thing that they were going to do? I know you say open up schools, start teaching them, but like, let's at least appreciate the time period. He's working on a premise that we see a lot in halacha of like, what am I going to do? Am I want more to say women have to do more things that they're incapable of and then we'll have all these sinners? Or do I want to try to limit it? That's his problem. I can show it to you afterwards if you want to see the rest of the text. But I'm going on. The Sefer Maarot, also from a smidge later in Provence, in the same area, he says, talking about the question of women, 10 women with Zimun, he says, Mikol makom nira shalom limchop yadam lizamen b'shem, kevan shalom huskura din ze b'gemara. He said, I don't think we should prevent 10 women from making a Zimun and adding Elokeinu, because the Gemara didn't mention it. The Gemara seemed to be talking about 3 women. The Gemara doesn't tell us anything about 10 women. What do we do when the Gemara doesn't say something? Do we assume it's prohibited or do we assume it's permissible? The Gemara didn't tell us otherwise. He says they can do it. And then later on, the same text, he says something else that's interesting. He says, V'chein nashim, nireh lomar, d'hagadol mevrech nevrech lelokeinu, b'shvilam, d'cheivan shuachalim mehen, d'cheav berkat hamazon, yachol levrech b'shvilam. Here he's talking about a mixed group. He seems to assume the women don't know how to do it themselves. He's got at least 10 women. He's got one man there. The man can say the Zimun with the word Eloheinu as if there were 10, with counting these 10 women, because he ate with them, and he can fulfill their obligation in Zimun for them. And he says, V'leka mishum pritzut Hagadol im hanashim. There isn't any worry of licentiousness of causing mixed groups with this adult man and the woman. Why? The dafka avadim shehem prutzim ba'ariot. The text was specifically talking about those slaves that they are completely promiscuous. And then he goes on to say they just behave with wantonness and abandonment. Right. Aval b'nei chorim, free men, lo amin en hachi. We don't say that about free men and women together. Obviously, they can join. And then he says something really interesting, because this idea that he said in the Orthodox world is not thought of, and it's, to me, very fascinating. In the Orthodox world, we a lot of times have men doing things for women. You have to say Kiddush? I'll help you, man. I'll say Kiddush, and you'll say Amen. How does that work exactly, for me to say Kiddush, and you say Amen, and you fulfill your obligation? That actually, we halakhically join together. Right? As if I am you and you are me by saying the main. That's how it works. Right? But we do that all the time. And I'm talking from the Orthodox perspective. That's shocking. And I'm a pardes. I'm sorry. That happens in my modern Orthodox community all the time. But yet at other points in the modern Orthodox community, they say we can't mix these units of the 3 and the 10 because there's something immoral about mixing the sexes. Right? So he says here something very interesting. He says, Masim b'chol yom, sha'anashim motzi'im hanashim, mimikra megillah, mikidush, v'havdalah, birkat ha'bazon shoch ali behem. He said, my proof that there's no immorality when men and women mix isn't that I'm telling you I see them mixing in groups. I see them doing mitzvot for them all the time. If men can do mitzvot for women, then there's some joiny together that happens. So what does it matter if it joined then? Let them join for the 3, let them join for the 10. That thing about pritzut was only talking about slaves and not talking about free people. Okay? So that is one type of view for looking at this.
So
just
you say that the men could do them together?
Yeah. For and one man and 10 women, it was as if there's a minion of women, they mention God's name. Yeah, what? I wasn't clear. He says he's talking about that he's doing it b'shem. The idea of doing it with God's name is this idea that you add the Elokeinu when there is 10. Right? A normal 3 of men says, let's bless God. And then when there are 10 men, they say, they add another name of God. And that's called doing Zimun with God's name. And that happens only with 10. In a minute, we're going to see the Mishnah that talks about that. It's going to be the same Mishnah that tells us that the Tefillah needs 10. Yes,
he doesn't mention anything about what about when the women leading?
Right. I honestly think it's because he doesn't think that they can. But I don't, from his language, it doesn't sound like there would be a problem. Mm-hmm. He's talking about just the reality, like, it sounds like from his reality that they can. He's the same one before who just said, I don't think there's any reason 10 women can't do it with shame. It's not in the Gemara. That seems to imply the premise is 10 women alone, 10 women, but his reality is that the man is the one doing for. The next text, because I want to be balanced, is a text that, I could have brought you a number of texts, but this is another person that he's from the same area in France, slightly afterwards than the text we just saw, Rabbeinu Manoach, who writes a commentary on the Rambam. And he starts out by saying the same thing and talking about 10 women in Zimun. He says, V'inyan ze eino b'gemara b'mufurash. The Gemara doesn't explicitly say anything about this, but he goes the totally opposite way. And he says very general things about it. He says, "Dahad dichtiv b'mekelot barchu, v'hani lo ikrahu kal klal." The pasuk, another pasuk for we, the Gemara brings a number of pasukim for why groups of people bless God more. It says that in makelot we bless from the word kahal, that kahal, like communities, bless God. And women, they're not called the kahal. He doesn't tell us how he knows that. I mean, he just knows that, I think, due to women's status. Women aren't called a kahal. He says a few more things about linking it to prayer that I'm not going to read now because we're going to see, well, I re-bring him again. And at the end, he says the complete opposite is Rashi. Look after the three dots. He says, Va'af hasvara notenet, shelo yizamnu b'shem. Logic dictates that women shouldn't do a zimun with a shame, with ten, with saying God's name. Shehare ein behem dat, l'gadelu l'ramem shemo shel habakadosh baruch hu ka'anashim, uchtiv gadlu l'shemiti. I don't know how he explains the Gemara, but he says, this is his logic. Women, they don't have enough minds, to know God's greatness and to say God's name is great, and the pasuk said that's what we do. So obviously they can't do it. So his premises are not, they're based on his assumptions about women. Women aren't communities. Women don't know how to bless God. He doesn't have another source. But this idea that women don't do zimun b'shem, they don't use God's name, and that's what you do for 10, it's codified in the Shulchan Aruch. If you just look at the last line here, right? It says women can do it on their own, slaves can do it on their own, and then ubavad shelo yizamnu b'shem. I think it's reflecting on both the women and the slaves. You possibly could read it as only reflecting on the slaves. It's the Shulchan Aruch. He's quoting the Rambam. The Rambam says it. And I think it's the normative halacha in modern Orthodox communities. I'm not going to look at Megillah. I'm going to tell you outside and you'll look at it at home because I want to be able to have the time to really spend on tefillah. Megillah reading is something that there's actually a discussion. Do you need 10 or not for Megillah reading? I didn't bring those texts. It's an obligation that the large majority of people say that if you do it not on the time period, I don't know if you've learned the Mishnayot and Megillah, but there were certain places where they gathered on the market days, even before either the 14th or the 15th of Adar. And when you read like that, not on the time, if you're reading on the 11th or 12th or the 13th, you for sure have to have 10. And there's an opinion in the Gemara that says even when you're reading either on the 14th outside of a walled city or on the 15th inside of a walled city, you need to have 10. And everyone understands it's better to do it with 10 because there's more publication of the miracle of Purim if you have 10. And here, there's actually a lot more voices. I'll do it quickly. The Be'iri, right? He says, Afal pisha b'mikra megillah mitztrafot la'asara u'motziot etarabim b'zeh chiyuvam shaveh. Here he talks about chiyuv. He thinks they're obligated equally to men. They can be motzi men. This isn't a shir megillah, but there are lots of people who say women can be motzi men in megillah. And therefore, of course, they count in the 10. It's like he has one line on it. There's nothing more to say. The Ron, the next one, he says, I know that there are people who say they don't join, and it's because they want to compare it to Zimun, and they want to say there's pritzut there. If you look like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines down, it says Mishum Pritzut. He's quoting people who say, like Zimun, there was Pritzut, this licentiousness, so with Megillah. And then he says, you can't say this. The Hatim Hu Sheinan Motziot Anashim Bibrachatem. He said, maybe with Birkat Mazon, you could say there's a different level of obligation. Of Akan in Megillah, Hey Achef Shar Shemotziot Anashim Yidei Kriya V'ein Mitztrafot Imahem L'minyan. Elevadai mitztarfot. How could it possibly be here with Megillah reading that they could be motzi med, they could fulfill the obligation for med with the reading, and they wouldn't join with them in the minyan? They for sure can join. That's his understanding of it. He goes on to explain why there should be a difference if there's no pritsut. It's not a great answer. I'll tell it to you outside. His claim is, you got this one. I think this is after people are already eating together and you have to sort of understand the difference. He says, with zimun, if you count women, people like sort of pay attention. Oh, do we have a zimun? And then they change, or they, someone said Eloheinu and you look up, do we have one, right? There's a change in the language when you have the more. So women's presence will be noticed and then maybe licentiousness will happen. Whereas with Megillah reading, nothing changes if you read the Megillah. It's actually not true because the last bracha you need a minion, but by then it's after the story, I guess. Nothing really changes, his claim is, when you read Megillah with 10. So no one's going to notice women if you're counting them, so there's no licentiousness. I told you it's not a good answer. I think he's struggling because for him, he wants to say, I have to think they count. They can, they're obligated, they're motzi men, they have to count, I have no other way. And so he's trying to give an answer that's not a great answer, but it shows how strongly he believes in the premise because he clearly didn't figure it out from this difference. He knew that he wanted them to count, and now he's trying to backwards work to say why. Just about Megillah reading, you'll see that the Raman, the Shulchan Aruch, the Rav Moshe Yisro list, the Ashkenazi Glash, the Shulchan Aruch, this is one of the very few places, like very few, right? You're writing a law book, you're saying what the law is, and he codifies as the law, I'm not really sure if women count. Yishli Stepekim and Hashim Mitzvot La'asara for this. He doesn't know what the halacha is. Should they? Shouldn't they? He rarely says that. And what's very, very... This is all Megillah. This is all Megillah. He very rarely says such a thing. What's fascinating about women in Megillah reading is the large majority of modern poskim, those even in the Haredi world, argue that 10 women can make up a minyan for Megillah on their own, and that the whole issue of why the Rama wasn't sure, it was because he wasn't sure about a mix and because he was worried there might be some type of pritsut. But for sure, 10 women. And the reason they're doing it is because they're not thinking about these modern Megillah readings where only women are reading. They're thinking about the fact that women, for sure, whether you think they're obligated the same or men or not, everyone believes women have to hear Megillah reading. And women had, even in the Haredi communities, they used to set up these readings for women because not everyone can go to shul because you don't want to make noise because the kids, so you have to have double readings. And men would be reading for women. But if the women need to read with, they're obligated in the hearing it and it needs to be done with 10, we got to know when the one man's reading for a group of women, is that considered 10? Like, how do I play that out? And so what's fascinating, if you look and look from the second paragraph here, he says, this is the Tzitz Eliezer, a modern posek in Israel, in the Haredi world, writing in 1977. He says, In my opinion, it's simple. They can read the Megillah in front of them as 10 women, and they don't need 10 men because they are obligated in Megillah reading, and they for sure can join together to be a 10 on their own and read before them. He goes on to claim, a little lower in the paragraph, that for sure, gam b'nashim chishuv persum, right, that if the whole point of the 10 is to publicize the miracle, and this could be, maybe there's a difference for the 10, for sure women can do that. And he goes on to say that, like, people who claim that they can actually cause a problem, because then women bring little ones to shul, and they make noise, and that's a problem when you want these separate women's Megillah readings. Okay, so I just wanted to show you that on all sorts of issues, it isn't cut and dry in these other areas. And the question is, what's happening with tefillah? Now, I got to tell you the problem with tefillah that I don't really know the answer to, and to me this is just absolutely crazy. It is that the rabbis, they love to tell you, I'm talking about the rabbis in the Mishnah and the Talmud, on any mitzvah, they love to tell you who's in and out. They spend a lot of time saying who's obligated, who isn't obligated. I don't know if you've ever learned anything about women, but they tell you on all the mitzvot, she's obligated this, is she exempt from this, and they have all sorts of, they talk about minors, and they talk about slaves, and they talk about mamzerim, and they talk about all different types people that are both men and women. They have all different categories of types of people, and they love to tell you, that's one of their main goals and roles, to tell you who's obligated in mitzvot. And what is crazy, and I say really crazy, is they never say who counts in the minyan for things that we call a devar shebekdusha, which we're going to see in thing, something that sanctifies God's name, for those things that happen in the synagogue. They don't say. They don't say who. They don't say yes women, they don't say no women, they don't say yes slaves, they don't say no slaves, they don't say yes kids, no kids, they don't say. Nowhere do they say. It's so weird. I mean this, nothing to do with the women thing. It's just so strange. The thing that we spend in the Orthodox community so much time arguing about, who do we count? Are you a Jew? Are you not? Or do we count women? Do we not? We think that this is so important. Who is in that 10? And they don't say. Which to me, so I struggle with this a lot. Is it that they think they've told us somewhere else and maybe we're supposed to know? We're just supposed to know if you're obligated in tefillah, you would count. Is it that they think that they told us, they used these psukim we're going to see and they mentioned them with martyrdom and they did say something there? And so, like, why is it that they, was it so obvious? But the answer that it was so obvious is so weird because on all these other things, they tell us and they didn't feel like all those other ones were so obvious. I don't know why, but let's look at these sources because some of them give us a little bit of hint. I desperately want some water. Do you think I can drink from that bottle? Whose bottle is that? Will you get me some water? I'm sorry. Okay. So the main place where we learn that you need a minyan is a Mishnah in Masechet Megillah. And that's here on page 5, the first source. And it says the following. What's interesting, it's a list of 10 things that you need 10 for. It's like in the beautiful literary structure of the Mishnah. It says, Ein porsim al shma, ve'ein ovrim lifnei teva, ve'ein nosim kafehem, ve'ein korim b'torah, ve'ein mafterim b'navi, ve'ein osim aman u'mishah, ve'ein omrim berkat avelim, v'tanchumei avelim, u'berkat chatanim, ve'ein mizamnim b'shem, pachot mi'asara, u'bakarkaot, tisha v'kohen, v'adam koyotze behem. So there's a list. The first thing, some of the things on the list we don't really understand. The first thing is called this pares al hashma. Pares means to cut, like slices. The slicing of the shma. We don't know what that is. All the commentators try to say. It seemed to be they had some type of responsive saying of the shma that we don't do anymore today, and you didn't do that unless you had 10. We don't, ovrim lifnei ateva, pass before the ark. That is the idiom in the rabbinic language for the prayer leader coming and doing the repetition of the Shemona Esrei. So we don't do the repetition of the Shemona Esrei of the silent prayer. The ein nosim kaveim, referring to the Kohanim. The Kohanim don't bless the people. We don't read from the Torah in public Torah readings. So thank you so much. We don't read Haftorah. Okay? We don't do something called the standing up and the sitting down, which was something linked to a funeral procession, which we don't do at all anymore, but you don't do that without 10. You don't say a certain blessing that you said for mourners that we don't do anymore in a type of way we comfort them. We don't do that anymore without 10. You don't say the blessing of the bridegrooms, which is the Sheva Brachot, the 7 blessings at a wedding. We don't do that with less than 10. And we don't do the Zimun with God's name. Maybe I should have read this Mishnah first. If I was better educationally, I would have, right? You don't do that with less than 10. Okay? Now, the word Asara, yes, it's in the masculine. But that doesn't tell us anything, because it was 5 women and 5 men. It would say Asara as well, right? It doesn't say Asara Anashim, Asara Zacharim, Asara anything. It just is Asara, right? Only in the last line does it tell us a little bit about who counts. This last thing is about if I had land that I wanted to dedicate the value of it to the temple, right? I want to give the land to the temple, but my land is up in Tveria. I can't like cut up that land and move it down to the temple, so I need to evaluate its worth and I'm going to give the money to the temple. And there's some type of public evaluation that happens to do this. The temple gets a say. They get the representative to be part of the 10. So one of those people has to be a Kohen. So in that type of 10, we find out one thing. One Kohen needs to be. The same is for people. The Torah talks about that you could dedicate your worth to the temple, like what you'd get on your value on the slave market. Yes, we have psukim all about that and all things. Same thing. If I'm dedicating my worth, a Kohen gets to be one of them. That's the Mishnah. What's interesting about the Mishnah and the way the Gemara understands this Mishnah, it breaks it in half. The first 5 things on the list are things that happen in the synagogue, and the second 5 things are things that don't happen in the synagogue. And the Gemara understands the reason for the 10 differently for the 2 halves of the list. I'm going to start with the second half of the list, if you'll look. You know what? I'm not going to read it all, but we'll read the last one, and you'll trust me that if you read all of it, you'd see. On the 3 lines from the bottom of the source, it says, Ein mizamnim al hamazon b'shem pachot mi'asara. We don't do a zimun, another version that had on food, with God's name with less than 10. Why? Kevan debay lemeirar nivrech le'eloheinu. You have to say, we're going to bless to our God. But tzir mi'asara lav aruch ara. With less than 10, it's just not derech eretz. Aruch ara. Aramaic for Derech Eretz. It's just not nice. It's not appropriate. Like, can you imagine if, like, right, we all, you have a big, you're saying this great thing, we're going to talk, bless our God, and there's only like three of you doing it. Like, it's just not like, you want to have a group saying, all of us as a group are blessing our God. It's just not appropriate. That's the same thing. This phrase, Orach Ara, on all of them. This, the thing in the funerals that we don't do anymore, it seemed to be they had a funeral procession that there was like an MC to. And then he would say, friends, rise up. And then friends, sit down. And it was like this whole thing. But if you're doing that with three people to go, everyone rise now, it's just not, it's not nice. It brings attention to that no one showed up at the funeral. And so for the last five things on the list, the reason we have 10 is about, like, what is appropriate? Is it something about this, the way it is? It's nicer to do things in groups. Nothing more, nothing less. And for me, in my opinion, then who would count that? It doesn't seem to have to be any type of exclusionary group. That would just be my gut about it. But the Gemara says nothing about it. The first five things on the list, the Gemara says the following. Now we're back to where it says Gemara. Minahani mili. This is going to be a little hard, and I don't have a board because it's a little bit of like Gemara mathematics, but you'll hopefully can bear with me and I'll try to explain it. How do we know this? What they want to know is, how do we know you need 10? Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, first generation, Amor of Eretz Yisrael. The Amar Kra, we have a pasuk in Vayikra that says, V'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. Kol devar shebikdusha lo ye pachot me'asara. There's a pasuk where God says, I am sanctified in the midst of, I'm going to go with children of Israel at the moment, or just will say B'nai Israel. Right? Do I say sons? Do I say children? What do I say here? But let's go for a moment with children, because I don't think at the moment there isn't an agenda to say anything about gender. Right? God says, I'm sanctified in the midst of Israel. Right? That somehow being in a group of the congregation of Israel sanctifies God's name. Okay, so that's how we, and then we learn from this, Rabbi Yochanan learns from this, that any act that is a devar shebikdusha, that brings holiness to God's name, you shouldn't do with less than 10. We still haven't understood why 10. But we now understand something. There's certain acts that Jews do communally that bring praise or sanctity to God's name, and those are called Dvarim Shebikdusha. He seems to be identifying the first five things on the list as those, things that happen in the synagogue. And when God says, I'm somehow sanctified in the midst of Bnei Israel, I need to now figure out, here's the halachic mathematics, how do I know what is the minimum group of people that we call that Bnei Israel? Okay? If you get the technicality or not, don't worry, but I just want you to see, because they're going to do this halachic mathematical equation again. So, if I had a board, I want to know, like, B'nai Israel equals X. What's the minimum to being in the midst of B'nai Israel? It's not worth it because we have no time. But you're going to bear with me to, like, I'm committing to 9:15. That's what I'm committing to, okay? I stole those 15 minutes, but we didn't start exactly on time. And we never really said how long it's supposed to be, so I think that's reasonable. So then it says the following. My mahashma. D'tani Rabbi Chia, atya toch, d'ktiv hacha, nikdashti b'toch b'nei Israel, v'ktiv hatam hivdolu mitoch eida. All right, I want to figure out, in the midst of Israel, how much is in the midst of Israel? Well, I want to know, to be in the midst of someone, like, if it was just the two of us, would we say we're in the midst? Probably not. If there were three, would we be in the midst of something? We want to figure out, like, how many you need to be in the midst. So I have another pasuk that uses the same word toch, to be in the midst of. This other pasuk is a pasuk. Does anyone know where this pasuk is? Separate yourself from the Eda. It's a pasuk about Korach. Also another great model for this, right? Korach is about to get swallowed up. If you don't want to get swallowed up with him, you should move to the side. That's the point of the pasuk, right? So you won't want to be in the midst of this Eidah of Korach, this congregation of Korach. Okay, but what I've learned now is I know that mathematically I can be in the midst of Bnei Israel, and now I learned that whatever the definition of an Eidah is, a congregation, you can also be in the midst of it. So, okay, if I could only find out how many a congregation is, then I would know you could be in the midst of it, and then I could sub all the, like, X's back in. So I have a third pasuk. The third pasuk is the pasuk you mentioned earlier. It says, I'm now going to learn Eidah, Eidah. So I've learned from Toch to Toch, and now I'm going to take the word Eidah that was in my next pasuk that was linked to Toch and learn it. And I have another pasuk that says, Amatai le'Eidah harazo. When Moshe just can't take it anymore, these spies come back with the evil report. He's complaining to God. He says, how much longer do I have to suffer this evil congregation? And he uses the word Eidah there. But in that case, He uses the word Adam. We know how many are in the group when he calls them a congregation, because there was one spy for each tribe, and we know there are 12 tribes. They went off to Eretz Yisrael. They came back, and two of them, Yehoshua and Kalev, gave good reports, and only 10 of them were Ra'ah. So when he uses the word congregation, he's talking about a group of 10. From the pasuk about Korach, we know you can be in the midst of an Edah, so you can be in the midst of a group of 10, and then we can sub it back into, I'm in the midst of Bnei Yisrael. Ah, now I've learned that it's 10, right? Obviously, they had the 10 first, and they're looking for the limud. It wasn't that they just like thought, how many is it? Let's learn all these psukim. I know this because the Yerushalmi uses other. The Yerushalmi knows that they're supposed to do betoch. They like know you're supposed to do some mathematical things, but they didn't know what the psukim were, and they brought other psukim. If we were doing this, it's just funny to see. They bring a pasuk about Bnei Yisrael going down to Mitzrayim, not Bnei Yisrael, the Jewish people, but actually Bnei Yaakov, when there was the famine. They go down. What?
They're 70 then.
In Sefer Bereishit, the actual 12 tribes, but there aren't 12 because Yosef's already in Mitzrayim, right, and they leave Binyamin at home. Mm-hmm. And so they have that, they use that pasuk to figure out the 10, but you'll see, it's funny, but it's clear that they know 10 and they're looking for pasuk. Either way, I'm telling you all this is, I want you to see that the Gemara isn't interested in telling me, they haven't yet told me it's men, and this is the whole Gemara. They want to know how. So for some 10, it's a Devar Shebekdusha, and I learn it from God sanctified in the midst of Israel. And other tens, I learn it's the way of the world, that it wouldn't be nice. Not Derech Eretz. Okay. Not yet, I don't know anything about ten. But I have this other Gemara in Masachet Sanhedrin. This Gemara also has Rabbi Yochanan talking. This Gemara is talking about martyrdom. Okay? Giving up your life for God, for like the ideals of what the Torah stands for. Now, let's see if we're not going to read it. It's the big three that I told you about. And what's fascinating is it's our same Rabbi Yochanan talking the whole time. And they ask this question, right? So you should see, just I'm starting here. They're talking about, would I have to martyr myself even in public? And the answer is going to be yes. Why? V'lo tichalu at shem kodshi, v'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. They're learning the same concept. Martyrdom is learned from the same thing. God is sanctified in the midst of Israel. And therefore, if this thing is taking place, bow down to this idol, or I'm going to kill you, or eat this pork and I'm going to kill you. If it's done in public, you might need to martyr yourself. That's the ultimate sanctification. That's the Kiddush Hashem of God's name. Okay. And then the Gemara says, how many is public? The Chama Farhesia. I'm a Rabbi Yaakov. I'm a Rabbi Yochanan. Remember, it was Rabbi Yochanan who said the same thing. He says, Ein Farhesia Pchuta Miasara B'nei Adam. Okay. Now we have a slightly new statement. Public is not with less than 10 B'nei Adam. Interesting. Pshita Yisraelim ba'inan. It's obvious they need to be Jews. Dechtiv v'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. I'm sanctified in the midst of Israel. Now they do something really a little bit odd. They ask a question by Rabbi Yirmiya. The question isn't on the answer's odd. Tisha Yisrael v'nochri achad mahu. Well, you said 10 Jews. Well, what if there are like 9 Jews and 1 non-Jew? Would that be, like, is that count as publicity? And then they do a weird thing. Instead of just saying, well, the pasuk said B'nai Israel, no, they start doing something that I honestly don't understand. They do the same toch, eda thing like that. They know that they're supposed to, like, throw out the mathematical equation somehow. They say the same thing, and then they, at the end, say, well, ma lahalan asarav akulu Yisrael, afkan asarav akulu Yisrael. Just the way in those cases they're all Israel, so too here they're all Israel. So here we have the exact same psukim, exactly the same. Nikdashti, hivdu mitoch ha'eda, and they say, Rabbi Yochanan himself says, and this is the ultimate sanctification of God's name. If we say Torah reading somehow sanctifies God's name, this is you giving up your life for God, right? Here Rabbi Yochanan says it's 10 B'nai Adam, 10 human beings, which sounds like, and particularly the jump to, right? They start to say, no one said, like, well, is that 10 men, 9 men and 1 woman? They went, no, is that 9 Yisrael and 1 non-Jew? It sounds like anyone who's in the category of Yisrael is in. I want to know if non-Jews are in. And it's not just me that is saying this. We're going to see in a second, in our speedy Gonzales way, that there are people who think that for this minyan, women count, which now becomes challenging. But I have one more text that's going to, like, put things Like, what did the rabbis really think? This one's really going to blow you away of, like, I don't know what they're thinking. This is a Mishnah. So far, maybe they told us here, right? I said they didn't ever tell us who counts in the minion. Maybe this Gemara was them thinking they told us. 10 B'nai Adam. Nikdashti B'toch B'nai Yisrael. Like, what, you know, they're not like, you know, the 2,000 years later, we have such a strong tradition that women don't count. And so, like, the idea that they would count is so bizarre. They said it was a 10. Like, they, I don't know what they thought. I still really don't know what they thought. But this next Gemara is going to make you even more confused about that. This is a Gemara from Masechet Brachot. It starts out with our Zimun again. It says, Nashim Abanim Uktonim Eim Mezamnim again. Like, this thing about this unit of the three mix, we can't do a Zimun for them. And it seems to imply that men can't, this line seems to imply that maybe men can't join with them. But then it says, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Katan Hamutal Ba'arisa Mezamnim Alav. I know the Mishnah said that minors, we don't do a Zimun, but Rabbi Yossi thinks, you know, a baby in the cradle. Baby in the cradle, like, doesn't know any, like, is young. He can't answer. We'll count him in the Zimun. That's what he says. We'll keep going. Let's keep going. And then the Gemara says, wait. Wait a second. How can you say that? It just said we don't do a Zimun with them. And then it says, V'hud amark Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. No, he holds like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Damar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Afo pisha amru katan hamutal basara imizam nima lav. Avo osimoto snif lasara. Let me explain to you. This is what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says. Yes, I know we're not supposed to normally count them, but there's a special case when we'll count this katan in the cradle. When is this? When we're going to make him a branch to the 10th. What's a branch to the 10th? A branch to the 10th is when I almost have 10, right? This is the scenario where Jewish communities in are a lot. We're up to 9. We really want 10. Can't we just have 10? Oh, there's that baby in the cradle. Let's reach out and branch to him, and we'll grab him and make him our 10th. Even though, the assumption is, this is very important, even though normally he doesn't count as being one of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, but because we're so close, he's going to be our branch to help us reach to as if we got to 10. This is the assumption of the Gemara, and this is a halachic principle. And then we get more. So now the baby in the cradle, he can be the branch of the 10. The Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Tisha the Eved Mitzdarfim. 9 and a slave, right? Also, slaves aren't normally in the 9, but we'll now say that a slave could also be this branch. We'll let them join together to be the 10. And then we say, really, is that true? We bring a challenge from the time period of the Mishnah, Meitveh, Maseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, Shenichnas l'Beit HaKnesset, V'lo Matzah Asarah, Shichur Evdo, V'Hishlimu La'Asarah, Shichur In, Lo Shichur Lo. We had a case of Maseh, Rabbi Eliezer showed up in Shul. There weren't 10, so he freed his slaves to complete the minyan. Nice of him. And so that's the text. And then the Gemara says, well, it sounds like if he hadn't freed him, he wouldn't have been able to complete. You know, if he freed him, yes. If he didn't free him, no. And then the Gemara says, no. You didn't know the story. I don't know if this is true or not, but this is how the Gemara says. Trades to who? There was only 8 in Shul. They needed 2, right? And this branch can only be for the last one. So one he had to free to get to 9, and then he used his second slave to be the 10th. This is how the Gemara understands it. I don't know if it's really true, what it was. Seems a little suspicious from the original story, but this is how the Gemara, because definitely the Amoraim have this idea that the baby could be the branch, the slave could be the branch. Now, we know women, slaves, and minors, they go together a lot. We've now mentioned the slave, and we've mentioned the baby. You would think maybe the Gemara might ask 9 plus a woman, can she? But no, the Gemara goes somewhere else. They're not done, but they go to Crazyville. Amar Rav Huna. Tisha v'aron mitzarfim. 9 plus the Aron Kodesh. They join together. And then we have Rav Nachman, the voice of sanity. V'aron gavrahu is an Aron, a man. Yes, I know he uses the word man, but I don't think, if you want to try to learn something, you can. But I don't think that's his point. Is it's a person? Like, what are you counting the Aron for? Right? And then it says, Ela Amar Rav Huna. Tisha nirim katzara mishtafim. If you have 9 that look like 10, we'll say it's 10. And then the Gemara says, well, what does that mean? Amarle, ki mikanfe, amarle ki midani. Some people say it's when they're all huddled close together, like you have a group of people all together, so you can't really tell the difference. Some people say, no, like, it's when they're spread out. What are they saying? When you have 9, it's a lot of people. We have 9. We want to do the minyan. It's almost that we have 10. It feels like we have 10. There feels like, that's what they're saying. They'll count. Yes and no. Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous if it's a formal thing. There needs to be 10 and you have 9 and you don't. Correct, but what it sounds like is, the point is, it's supposed to feel like a group of people are blessing God. And we feel like we got a good big group of people here. Yeah, when you go like this and figure it out, it's actually like, right? It's at that moment where you think, do we have 10? We don't know exactly. We don't look at a group and know if there's 10. You have to go like that. It feels like there are a lot of people here. And then what? We're not gonna read from the Torah now? We're not gonna say them, like, there's an incentive. They want to get the minion. I know it's weird, but it's just the Gemara. I didn't make this up.
What if there's 7? I mean, it's like,
no, but okay. So they're 5. You don't feel, you're upset that you didn't get a minion, but no one feels like, oh my gosh, we were so close, right? They're 5. But when they're 9? Okay, so after this one, then they say, Amar Rabbi Ami, Shnayim b'Shabbat mitzterfim. So they're switching back and forth between the Zimun and the 10, but here we're back to the 3. You have 2 and Shabbat, that can equal 3. I know you... Maybe the Shabbat's the Shabbat Malkah. She's female. Who knows, right? You know, Amalei Rav Nachman, v'Shabbat Gravru? What are you talking with the Shabbat? Right? Amalei Avami, Shnei Talmidei Chachamim HaMachadim Zeb Zeb HaHalacha Mitzarfim. So if I have 2 Talmidei Chachamim and their halachic discourse, the halacha can join. And then they start going off, right? Then one person says, that's like me and Rav Sheshet. And then he says, no. Rav Sheshet says, that's like me and Rav Huna. Right? And that's the end of the Gemara. That's the end. That's the end. No one said, like, what about women? Can they be the 9th? Like, isn't that weird? Like, the 10th, sorry. Can they be the 10th? Like, and they weren't, it wasn't like they weren't trying to stretch their imagination, right? It wasn't like people were like, what about the Aaron? What about Shabbat? What, like, it wasn't like they're thinking of everything. And they said slave, and they said baby.
Maybe it really was obvious.
So, obvious, but which way?
That women are people. I mean,
that are or aren't. Maybe it's so obvious that they're part of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 that we would never ask them about the 10th, right? That seems more logical than saying it's so obvious that they don't count, because the whole point, like, so then say, what about 9 plus a woman, then say no. But I just telling you, it's just, it's very strange. What did the rabbis think about women? I don't know. I honestly don't know. Were they in? And that's part of, like, B'nai Israel women, because I can explain that a slave isn't a full B'nai Israel, and that maybe a minor is, like, we don't have them do any mitzvah because they're not a fully cognizant B'nai Israel, and I could explain it. When it said 10 B'nai Israel, women are in. Okay? I know that this is, that quite early on, there was an understanding that it doesn't count women. You're looking at these, the face of, like, I don't know what you're thinking. You're just, like, of distress or confusion. So very early on, like in the Sidur of Rav Amram Gaon, he just says, Shiur HaTzibur Hu Asara Zacharim, right? In the time of the Gaonim, the measurement is 10 males. He doesn't say why. He doesn't say, I know. And so I'm now for a moment in the camp of thinking women don't count at all. Oh, my God. Okay, I'm going quickly. Our Mordechai, remember the Mordechai and the Rabbeinu Simcha? Right? He says also about tefillah. He says, Mitzati b'shem Rabbeinu Simcha. Let's assume that women don't count as the core 9. But wait a second. It said minor. It said Evid. Right? Rabbeinu Simcha says, De Evid v'isha mitzarfim. Bein la tefillah, bein la berchat Eloheinu. Why? Because Rabbi Eliezer counted his slave, right? At the very end, right? And it says, V'hu adin li'isha. If you're going to say a slave can be the 10th, Rabbeinu Simcha says, I'm with you. Women don't count. But if you can say a slave can be the 10th, and you can say a baby can be the 10th, then for sure a woman can be the 10th, right? Which is, of course, the scenario that is always so painful to women. When they're 9 and women, and then they go, we don't have the minion, right? Rabbeinu Simcha thinks you could count. And in fact, okay, I'm going to skip for 1 second ahead, because of the Beit Yosef, Rav Yosef Karo, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, this is source number 8. Right, says the following. He quotes this Rabbeinu. He says, "Ketav of Mordechai." You're gonna hold your page because I'm gonna make you flip back in 1 second. It says, "Ketav of Mordechai b'shem Rabbeinu Simcha to Eved v'isha mitzarfim l'tvila l'berkat avzimun ba'asara b'shutu zehu l'perish Rabbeinu Tam." He said, "Rabbeinu Simcha said that a woman or slave could be the 10th, and that for sure is according to the explanation of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is another Tosafist. What did Rabbeinu Tam say? Hold, flip your page back. Rabbeinu Tam doesn't say this about women. He explains it about why the Eved or the child says. This is source number 5. Listen to what Rabbeinu Tam says. It says, Vani Mosif, Afilu Mutal Ba'arisa, I'm adding, even a baby in its cradle, Da'alko Beit Asara Shechina Shara, that on any group of 10, God's presence resides. Because I learned the concept of kedusha from the pasuk, I'm sanctified in the midst of Israel. Right? It doesn't. The Jewish people, it didn't say you have to be an adult, you have to be a minor. God's Shechina resides with the Jewish people. All those limitations, right? This isn't about are you obligated in mitzvot, are you not obligated in mitzvot, right? It says here, ubavad shiyat tashay gdolim v'tvei michadlo. As long as there is at least 10, and now he's going to explain why. He mentions also about the Eved. Why? Because the leke yikara deshmaya kule hai. He said, on the one hand, God's Shechina resides with any grouping. But if we're talking about, is it honorable to God if the whole group would be made up of slaves? It's not really honorable to God. And so his argument seems to be that, continue, deshchina shara al kol mechayve mitzvot ubnei brit. The Shechina resides on any people who are part of the covenant. And therefore they could join. But when it comes to being able to be motzi other people, they can't do it. And so his understanding, Rabbeinu Tam's understanding is, the base understanding, this link, it was interesting to me that you said Kavod HaTzibor because you were thinking of Torah reading, but this is a similar idea that not everyone knows or realizes. Rabbeinu Tam says, God is sanctified in the midst of the Jewish people. That's anyone who's part of the covenant. God's Shechina resides. Is that the best way to do it? To have 10 avadim, or to have 10 kids, or to have 10, he doesn't talk about women, but Rabbi Yosef Karo is linking Rabbeinu Simcha to saying it's also women. That's not nice for the honor of God. So we say, we'll do 9 of the good qualified one, and we'll only use one of these when we need an extra. He's explaining, how does it work? His goal is to explain, why is it that we can count these people as the 10th? Because really, they're part of the unit in the first place. We just exclude them because it's not so honorable. But when we need them, we'll go back to relying on it. Okay?
Only one.
Because of dignity. Because of God's honor now. Not because of anything technical. Are they obligated, not obligated? Right? Which then I could possibly argue that once woman's status changes, that there might not be something so argued. But listen, this is even more crazy. Go back to the Beit Yosef, right? So he says, Rabbeinu Simcha said you could count women as the 10th, and this was based on the logic of Rabbeinu Tam. The Pasak Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, the Eved Achan Mitzterefa, Sovar Rabbeinu Simcha, Duhu Hadin Leisha. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said one Eved joins, and Rabbi Simcha said that is the rule for an Isha. V'chol Duchta Isha Shavel LeEved, because in every case a woman is equal to an Eved. Now, listen to this. Now this is Rav Yosef Karo speaking. I don't know how he knows this. He says, Kevan de Rabbeinu Tam ba'atzmo, lo ratza lasot maaseh, mi yakel bedavar, v'chen nahagu ha'olam sholo litzteref isha klal. It's a minhag. People, it's a minhag. Why? When we're in that terrible situation, we don't count women in the 10th. Because, I don't know how he knows this. When Rabbeinu Tam gave the shir before the academy, he taught, God's Shechina resides on all 10 of Israel. It doesn't matter what your status is. But somehow there was a ma'aseh. He was in shul the next day, and then he only had 9, and there was a woman there, and he didn't count her. I don't have any idea how Rabbi Yosef Karo knows this. But what? He's saying Rabbeinu Tam, who taught this idea, right? This happens a lot. A teacher says something is theoretically possible at halacha, but then you say, would you do it? And they say, no, I would actually do it. Right? So Rabbi Yosef Karo's claim is, Rabbeinu Tam didn't do it, even though logically it works. And he seems to be admitting, he admits logically it should work. And then he says, well, who can we? Rabbeinu Tam wouldn't do it. You're going to do it now? You know more than Rabbeinu Tam. Therefore, there became a minhag in the world not to count women at all. Not to count women at all. This is still in the assumption, I'm reminding you, that women weren't as part of the original 10, which I don't know why. No one said to me how they learned it or how they knew it. But it is the assumption. But even within that, the most horrible situation of we almost have a minion, can we count women for it? It's a minhag. So if we were just talking about, like, I mean, this is a much longer thing. If we were just talking about, like, the technicality and where there's loopholes at halacha for change, this sounds like a kind of easy one we could change. Yes, granted, I'm not saying I'm greater than Rabbeinu Tam, but possibly if Rabbeinu Tam lived in our time period, like, I think there's room to say, like, maybe the minhag could change. We're alienating so many women. It's a problem in communities where they can't, like, I think you could have used it, and it's just the minhag after all. Let's change it. I think sociologically. What?
Not all of mitzvot halacha. That's what everybody did, and therefore that's halacha.
Nachon, but he's still saying, like, so why don't we do it? Because who are we to be lenient according to him? I'm not. I guess I know minhagim are very strong. But I'm talking about in all the types of loopholes that we're looking for in the modern world of modern orthodoxy. Like, is this one that might be easier than some other ones? You know, if you, it seems like a possible. It's no bigger radical halachic solution than the communities that say I'll be mochal my kavod tzibur and let women get aliyot. It's for sure not halachically more radical. I don't think. I think sociologically, it's much more radical. That the issue of like who counts in a minyan and what this is the flag of egalitarianism and other denominations did it is much more of an issue of what people believe about the core group of Jews than from the technical halachic perspective. I want to even show you people who think they count in the core 10, but yes, go.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You're saying, oh, here's a loophole for reusing a woman as the 10th, but I don't care so much about the 10th.
I also don't care from the core of the offensiveness, but I think from the practical of the offensiveness, the 10th is important.
I do care because I'm in Shul with 9 men and me, and it's very offensive. But it's very offensive to be in Shul with 5 men and 5 women. Nachon. We don't have a minyan.
Nachon. Because to go back to that original Rabbeinu Simcha of the Zimun, like all we want to do really is sanctify God's name.
So the question like, is, you said yourself, they never.
Okay, so let's go. You're going to give me. Anyone who wants to leave should leave. So what I want to point out something to really interesting is the following. We could have read Rabbeinu Manoach on source 6, that same guy. He wants to make the drasha that it says B'nai Yisrael and not B'nai Yisrael. Source number 6. Right? Which is a weak drasha. Not just for numerous reasons, but particularly because we know with martyrdom that we use the same psukim. And I'm going to bring you people who say for sure women count. So to suddenly, and the Gemara didn't say, it said B'nai Yisrael and not B'nai Yisrael, men and, you know, the sons of Israel, not the children of Israel. Anyone who says they don't, it's clear that there's a very, very, very strong tradition that women didn't count. But people, when they're trying to find a source, don't have one because there isn't one. But what I want to show you something that's very, very interesting is, if you look in source number 7, when the Torah codifies these laws, even though it's clear that earlier there's an assumption, when he says, don't do these things with less than 10, and then he says, who is in the 10? Look at 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down. Afterward, it says the word yud means 10. Sirich shiyu kulam b'nei chorim v'gedolim. Shehiviyu shtei saror. The 10 have to be b'nei chorim, which is the opposite of what?
Slaves.
Gedolim, which is the opposite of what? That's it. It doesn't explicitly say Zacharim. And we're going to see in a second, again, we're going to spend, if you let me, when you flip to source number 12, the Rambam, the same thing, right? Enosim ken bepachot mi'asara gedolim b'nei chorim. Right? The two main codes before we get to Rav Yosef Karo, just say those words. And then when you look at, flip back to source 9, when you look at Rav Yosef Karo, he says, Zacharim b'nei chorim gedolim. Which is interesting, because it means he realized, because Rav Yosef Karo wrote a commentary both on the Torah and on the Rambam. So he realizes that something was missing that he feels was missing from that language, right? By adding the word Zacharim, I mean, maybe he thinks it was implied and he wants to make sure, but he, by adding it, where it wasn't before in the two other codes, makes you realize that he felt some discomfort with their language, and he realizes that if I don't say it explicitly, you might get confused to think something else. And what's even weirder is he said it by tefillah, and right underneath I have where he talks about Kriyas HaTorah, and there he forgot to add it in again, because he just copies the language that the Torah and the Rambam had there. He says, "En karim b'torah pachot mi'asara gedolim b'nei chorim." And he forgets to add in the Zacharim, and it's clear that it's something that he consciously chose to add in. So it's clear in the Shulchan Aruch that women don't count. But what it's interesting about is that the other two codes, it wasn't so clear. Forget that the Gemara, it's not clear. The other two codes don't explicitly say it. Maybe they implied it. Anyone who has to leave, you can leave, but you might want to hear the Rambam, because I want to claim that possibly the Rambam thinks women can count in a minyan. It's on a record now. I possibly believe, I'm going to say possibly to say all the maybes, that the Rambam thinks women can count in a minyan. And what I want to tell you about the Rambam that I know about him is despite the fact that the Rambam lives in Egypt and he talks about women not going out without a veil on them and that they can't leave their houses ever, he is very, 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 he sticks to the sources. When the sources say women can read Megillah for men, the Rambam codifies that women can read for Megillah for men. He does not let his social norms affect his halakha, which is really interesting because a lot of Ashkenazi poskim have these views about women and their status, and then they reread the sources in light of that. He is very clear. I could show you lots of places. If the text said yes, he'll say yes. And so listen, I'm going to finish, Deborah, I promise, but we got to say this. It said the following on source number 12, for minyan, he says, Einosim ken pachot mi'asara gedolim b'nei charim. Same thing. And then if you look on, he tells me a little bit more information. Look at Hay. He says, Shekol asara mi'israel hem nikarim edah, shene amar ad lamatah edah ha'razot. Right? And he, earlier he told me the nikdashti also. He says, he uses this phrase, any 10 mi'israel. He doesn't say b'nei or b'not. He said, any 10 of Israel are called an edah. And the next one on Vav, he says, Kol devar shebukdusha lo yehe ela batoch edah mi'israel, shene amar v'nikdashti batoch b'nei Israel. A thing that sanctifies God's name is with a congregation of Israel because it says sanctification of God's name. So now I want to tell you one quick thing about the Rambam. And you should know, here, this is the Kesef Mishnah. I brought it in small. This is Rav Yosef Karo's explanation of the Rambam. And he says about Parakhet, he says, the kol devar shebukdusha ein bechlal ha'asara avadim uktanim. He writes it in the opposite, right? He admits that when it's, who isn't included? Slaves and minors. So when you write it in the opposite, right, when you said adult free people, maybe because it was in the masculine plural, it means Zacharim. But Rav Yosef Karo flips it in his commentary and says the Rambam thinks it can't be slaves and it can't be minors.
But it could be women.
But it sounds like it could be women. And here's my more proof for you, okay? Scholars and academic scholars and religious scholars believe, because of the Rambam himself, that the Rambam uses language precisely. That when he says a word in one place, he means it. And there's a whole school of thought that like compares the Rambam's language. Brisk loves to do it. Well, he said this one place. He said this, oh, what is he saying? What does he mean? So in Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, which is the Lars about martyrdom, this is what the Rambam says. He says, Kol Beit Yisrael mitzuvim akidush Hashem hagadol hazeh shene'amar v'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. All of the house of Israel is commanded to sanctify God's name because the verse said, I'm sanctified in the midst of Israel. And I bring you one person because he just said it so clearly. Milashon harambam kol Beit Yisrael mitzuvim akidush Hashem hagadol mashma gam nashim v'gam ktanim. When he said everyone, he meant also women and also, right, it's Rav Meir Lau. Also children. It's how everyone reads it. It was just, he said it so precisely, so I brought him to say it. Rambam thinks that women are obligated because Nikdashti talks about them, but we'll get to the 10. Then the Rambam says here again, in this sanctification, this martyrdom, Ein Sham Yisrael, right? Ein Sham Asaram Yisrael, Asarab Yisrael, the same language. You have to have 10 from Israel, 10 from Israel. But can I know, does he count women in Israel? But here I know. Because one of the examples of the horrible thing that you might have to martyr yourself on in number 5 is Nashim amru lahem avodei kachayim. Tnu lanu achad mikem v'nitameh ota v'im lav nitameh kulan. Horrible case. I know I'm doing it quickly. It's horrible. They say to a group of Jewish women, choose one of you who we're going to rape, and if you don't choose one, we're going to rape all of you. That's the threatening case. Okay? What should you do? Al yimsaru lahem nefesh achad miYisrael. Don't hand over even one woman. But how does he say don't hand over even one woman? Don't even give one nefesh achad miYisrael. Uh-huh. And you just told me it has to be asara miYisrael and kol edah miYisrael. And women are obviously obligated in being dikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. And they don't have a gemara that says to me otherwise. I'm not claiming the Rambam counted women in his minyan. I'm just saying that the Gemara never said you couldn't count women, and it sounds like it maybe does, and the Rambam leaves that open. You on your own, in your spare time, because I know you love to learn Torah in your spare time, especially about women, you could read Rav Akiva of Emden, who seems to imply from the Kabbalah that he could. You could read a modern posek who says that the whole reason we don't count women in the ten is just it's not nice. It's not seemly, but really they should count.